Welcome to a Sunny Side Up Life podcast, a show for the woman who is ready to live an abundant life full of freedom and positivity. I'm Sammy Womack, and I'm on a mission to help you break free from survival mode, gain financial freedom, stay motivated, and focus on what matters most. Join the movement and let's start living on the brighter side of life together. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. So this week, I am kind of doing something kind of random. I was a little thrown off by the fact that there were 5 podcast episodes in May and really kept drawing a blank for this 5th episode of the month, and was like, I have no idea what topic I want to talk about. I want to talk about this. I want to talk about that. It was actually kind of too many topics. I didn't want to narrow it. I couldn't narrow it down. So I thought it would be really fun to just do a frequently asked questions kind of episode. And so I have, how many do I have? 6, 7, I think, questions from you guys. Some of these have been sent to me via email or DM on Instagram or posted in the Facebook community, the private group that we have. Some of them are so common that I've just kind of reworded them into, they're not like exact quotes. So bear with me on that. They're not all exact quotes, but they're questions that I get asked so often. And I thought if someone is wondering this, you are probably wondering it too. So let's share it. And that took care of my 5th episode of the month debacle that I was in. Okay. So before we jump into that, I want to read our review for this episode. So I told you guys to pop over to iTunes, hit subscribe if you haven't already, and leave me a review. And iTunes helps you, it boosts your podcast up basically, depending on how many subscribers you have and how many reviews you have and how good those reviews are. So that helps new people find the podcast. So that's why it's so important for me, because I want to reach new ladies. And I know that it's important to you too, because once you guys get on this path, you're like, yes, other people need to hear this. So this is a really good way to make sure that other women going through the same things you're going through are finding the podcast. So I appreciate you guys so much for leaving reviews. So on the weeks that I'm not doing interviews, I will be reading y'all's reviews. So this week's review comes from Love Made This, and she said, first time listener, now binging all the episodes, which I think is amazing. She said, I followed Sammy on Instagram for over a year now, and I love that she's constantly a source of inspiration and positivity. Every time I've reached out, she always answers questions, offers suggestions, and encouragement. For some reason, I've never listened to her podcast until today. I don't know why I waited so long. The podcast is filled with even more of this inspiration and encouragement. I love it. Thanks for putting out so much great free content, Sammy. That is so sweet. Thank you guys so much. So I will leave in the show notes the link where you can pop over, or you can just go through the iTunes app and leave me a review so maybe I can shout you guys out. All right, so let's jump into the first question. So this question says, Sammy says to set aside bill money when you get paid for your bills that are due until the next payday. So any bills that are due between the current payday and the next payday, to set aside that bill money. But what do you do if there's nothing left over after you do that? So that is a really, really great question. And a lot of us get into this like when we first start budgeting. First of all, realize that you will get more organized, you will get debt paid off, and that will help lower those monthly bills. You will get the hang of it as you go into it. So don't let that stop you from getting started. Just know that pretty much all of us started this way, feeling like there's not even enough money to pay all the bills between payday to payday, let alone get groceries and, you know, do other things. So it's really, really common. So my advice with that is the very first thing you can do is call or email your your bills, so your companies that your bills are through, and ask them if you can move around due dates. A lot of them don't really care. They just want you to pick a due date. And I know for us, even when we had a loan for our house, I think it was our house loan, they asked us if there was a certain time of the month we would prefer the mortgage payment to fall on. So the majority of the time, companies don't really care the specific date. They just want you to commit to a date. So you can call, you know, if you're maybe not like your rent or maybe not something like that, but like your cell phone bill, your minimum payments on credit cards, things like that. A lot of times you can just call and they'll let you move the dates around. So if that helps, that's really the first thing you can do. But I think that it's really, really important, first of all, to just dive in with your budget. So write out all of your bills, write out all of the due dates, you know, write out when your paydays are, and don't just do the upcoming pay period, do several out. Even if, you know, I say this all the time, even if you need to do it in pencil or you're doing it digitally on a spreadsheet, you know, so you can erase things here and there, just getting an outline of just what you estimate things should be like is really going to help you and kind of getting that in the future view. So as far in advance as you feel comfortable planning, maybe like 3 months, 6 months, even a year, if you get really crazy like I do, and it just makes you feel better to just know roughly where you'll stand at the end of the year. That is really, it's going to help you kind of get that aerial big picture view of where you stand with everything. So it might just be like every once in a while a pay period falls like that. And it might not be like every single pay period. So that really helps me just to kind of zoom out, get a big picture view of like where we stand with our bills, our spending, our debt, write everything down, just scribble it out, you guys. It does not have to be perfect. It does not have to be set in stone. Do it in pencil. Do it in pretty markers and don't be afraid to scribble and scratch. Do it on a spreadsheet. Get an app. It doesn't matter as long as you do it. If you are brand new to budgeting, I have so many resources for you guys. Obviously, I have my free resources, but I also have my worksheets that I use. The thing that I love about them is that I have them set up on Google Sheets. So you can use them digitally. You can use them from your computer or get the Google Sheets app for your phone, or you can print them and handwrite them. And if you need even more help with me to help you kind of go through all of the nitty-gritty details of starting a budgeting journey, that is what my course, Your Sunny Money Method, is for. And it is a full 30-lesson paid course that will help you get started in every different aspect of your budget. So you're doing this, you have your budget all laid out, you have that aerial view, you know where you're going to stand a couple of pay periods from now, you see when your bills are due, how much you're going to need for groceries, things like that. And, you know, you can kind of start to move things around. You're like, okay, if I could get my cell phone bill moved to this day of the month, that would actually fall right. So make a little note and then make a list of who you need to call. Maybe everyone won't let you move your due dates around, but maybe some of them will. That's a really good place to start. Especially debt payments. I feel like debt payments are usually more flexible. They just want you to pay them. In my experience, that's how most of them are. But if the issue, on the other hand, is overall you just don't have enough income to cover your bills and the necessities in your life, like food, then that's where you want to consider cutting back. So that's where you cut back anything unnecessary. And like I said, you've already got everything written out right in front of you. So this is a really good time to be like, yeah, my cable bill or my satellite bill is a lot more expensive than I thought. Or when did my cell phone bill get so expensive? Because they will creep up. You know, your internet bill will slowly but surely get more expensive. I don't even know how or why this happens. But you'll call and they'll say, oh, yeah, because this promotion ended. And so now your internet bill is more expensive. That literally happened to me. And I was like, okay. So you look, you pay attention and you look for, where can I lower my cell phone plan? Can I cut back my internet usage? Can I totally get rid of my satellite TV or my cable? Can I be more conscious with my water use or my electricity use, you know, things like that. And it might sound like, well, that might not change much. That might only change it $5 or $10. Yeah, but if you change it $5 or $10 for five different things, that's a good chunk of money every month, right? And, you know, you might get to the point where we were like, we've got to make some serious extreme changes. And that's when we downsized from a 3,200 square foot house to a 750 square foot house. Or maybe that's where I know several people in the debt-free community who move, especially out of really high cost of living areas like California or any of the other big cities. They will move to lower cost of living areas for the sole purpose of it's really expensive to live there. Or, you know, the housing market is crazy. For us, we stayed in the same town. We just moved to a smaller, cheaper house. You know, but you can make extreme changes like that. You are not alone in that at all, because so many people in the debt-free community do that. Or maybe it's time for you to think about getting a different job altogether. Or asking for a raise, or looking for ways that you could get a promotion. Like, what kind of training could you go through to get a promotion? Or could you start job hunting and find something that pays better? Or maybe you just need to pick up a little side hustle until you can kind of catch your breath again with your money and all that. But I think most importantly, you know, when you have everything written out, you're going to know your due dates. You're just going to have that control of knowing your due dates, knowing the amounts, knowing if you fall short, how much, where is it, what can we do? And then as you go through it, tracking every single dollar for your bills, every single dollar for your spending, all of that. And when you start to track it, you're going to look for weak areas, areas of overspending, and there are going to be some red flags that pop up, and it's going to be really obvious a couple of places that you can cut back. And don't expect to cut back everything all at once, okay? If you just decide, like, this month I'm going to focus on finding a way to lower insurance, and this month I'm going to look at ways to lower everything digital, like our TV, our cell phone, our internet, all of that. And then like the next month, I'm going to look for ways to lower our groceries. Be realistic, okay? We can't change every single aspect of our money spending habits in one month, okay? So set those goals and like do the most pressing issue in your budget. Like do that first. And then, you know, maybe even make a list of areas that you can work on and go from there. So our next question is, how do you deal with setbacks to your budget or your debt repayment plan? That is a really good question. And I see this one all the time, which is why it had to be on this list, obviously. So dealing with setbacks, you know, it's kind of in this where you start to make progress. You start to feel so excited. Like maybe you've got your emergency fund saved up. You've paid towards some credit cards, maybe even knocked a few things out. And then all of a sudden, something happens, or it could be an emergency, or it could just be you just kind of get sloppy on tracking things. And then you're like, oh my gosh, what are we doing? You get frustrated. And then you realize like you've set yourself back a month or two or more. You guys, this happens all the time. I know that doesn't take the pain away or the frustration away. But I think that knowing that it's normal, it's common, it happens to everyone at some point in their journey, I feel like that it should at least bring you some comfort and some peace of mind to know you're not alone, you're not a screw up. Like, It's normal. It happens. No plan is going to go 100%. Like, I wrote this in Sharpie and there is no way it's changing. Okay. No one's plan goes like that. And honestly, like, would you really want a written in Sharpie concrete life? That kind of sounds a little boring. Even if it means that you're taking out crazy stuff that makes you frustrated. All right. We're human. It happens. So, other than the pep talk, like, stop with the pep talk. Tell me what I actually need to do. This is where your emergency fund comes in handy, you guys. This is what you save for. Okay. You don't just save so you can just admire your bank balance, which I do, but I do that all the time. I log in just to make sure that it's still there. But it's there for a reason. That's what savings is for. That's why we have an emergency fund. It comes in handy because life is going to happen. And your savings account is that buffer between life happening the way it actually happens and the way you wanted life to happen. Okay. And I know that that is not like I can't wave my magic wand and fix it, but I hope that that helps. And I just want you to know that just because you have a few bumps in the road, it doesn't have to throw you off your entire path. So maybe you need to take a few minutes, maybe you need to take a day or two, throw yourself a pity party, be frustrated, cry if you need to cry. And then get your budgeting worksheets back out, get your written down goals back out, and pick yourself back up and be like, all right, that sucked. Now what do we do? And move on. Okay. It's okay to throw yourself a little bit of a pity party, but you guys, you have to realize that like 2 or 3 months, even 6 months, if your goals get pushed back that much, it's better than never happening, right? It's better than what your life was like before you started this intentional living journey and you had no idea when you would be debt-free. You thought you would never be debt-free. So doesn't 2 months later or 6 months later sound better than never or I have no idea? So I hope that that helps because I see that question all the time and know that you're not alone. I feel the same way. My husband triple feels the same way because he gets very impatient. We're human. We all feel like that, okay? But use that savings account. Use that emergency fund if you need to. If it's something that you need to set up sinking funds for, I will link to my resources about sinking funds. If you're like, well, what in the world is a sinking fund? Basically, it's an account where you slowly but surely sink money into it throughout the year for things like repairs or clothing or holidays, big things like that. You chip away at it. Like you throw $50 or $10 a month in that account, in that sinking fund. So when those random purchases come up, you'll have money waiting. It's like a cousin to an emergency fund. It's a savings account that you know for sure what you're going to use it for, if that makes sense. Okay. All right. Next question. I have seen a lot of questions about people wanting to know what to do with their kids' money. So obviously, like, we're on this intentional living journey and then we think, well, I want to teach my kids good habits. And I'm the same way. And I really struggled for a while of like, okay, what do I do with these kids' money? Because they have piggy banks, you know, they get money for their birthdays and Christmas and random holidays, their grandparents will like mail them a Valentine's Day card with $5 in it, or I don't know. They just seem to always be getting money from somewhere, which is amazing and such a blessing. But what do you do with that money? So for the longest time, we would just keep their money in their piggy banks. Well, their piggy banks got full, especially because for some reason they always have bills, not just coins. And those piggy banks got really full really quick. And so I cleaned the piggy banks out, and then I just kept cleaning them out and cleaning them out. And I just kept stashing their money in shoe boxes, and like each kid would have their own shoe box. Well, the anxiety was killing me from, I'm just like, the house is going to catch on fire or someone's going to break in and all of their money. And plus it's not doing them any good. It's just sitting in a shoe box. What do I do? So I started hearing a lot of great things about Ally Bank, and we use Ally for our savings. We have our big emergency fund in Ally, and we have a small emergency fund in our local bank just in case we need to do like instant transfer if there's like a very time sensitive emergency, because it does take a couple, like 2 or 3 business days to transfer back and forth out of Ally. Okay, but Ally is a totally legit bank. They are completely online, which I feel like that's how they're able to have such a high return on interest rates, is because I feel like they probably save a lot of money on overhead because they're just an online bank. They don't have physical branches. But I was a little skeptical of it too. I'm like, is this a legit bank? But we have banked with them for, I think, about a year now. And I know several people in the debt-free community who also use them. So they're very legit. At the time of recording this, the return on the savings accounts is 2.2%. I don't know about you, but that is way more than my local bank gives you in a savings account. My savings account with my local bank was actually costing me money because they were charging me a monthly fee. What? That is the complete opposite of a savings account. So we jumped over to Ally. We set up our accounts. We have our big emergency fund, like we call it our family savings account, because they, you know, you can give them all nicknames online. So that's our family savings. And then each of our 3 girls have their own savings accounts, and we have just set them up in our name for now. My sister is the beneficiary because she is the person in our will that would take custody of them if Daniel and I were both to pass away. So as of now, we have my sister as the beneficiary. We don't necessarily have our kids on there other than in the nickname of the account. We've put June's account, Isabel's account, Melanie's account. And that's all we've done. Their money's separate. And it is actually accruing a good bit of interest. And we're really, really excited about that. And obviously way more than it would if it was in a piggy bank. So that's what we use. And again, I'll link to that in the show notes as well as everything that I'm mentioning here. And you guys can check out Ally for yourselves. All right. So another kid-related question. I thought this was a really great, this wasn't necessarily a frequently asked question, but I was like, this topic needs to be discussed. So we're going to talk about this. So one of our sweet community members on my private Facebook group, I'll link to that as well. If you're not familiar, you have to get in that community. It's such a great Facebook group. Asked about her kids' stuff, okay, and her, and the money that her kids have. So she said that her kids are 3 and 1.5, and they've started savings accounts for each of them, and they put money in them when they get money from their birthday or other holidays. And her dad had said, so the grandfather to the kids had said, well, you know, if you need the money for something, like if you're, you know, you're paying off your debt and all of that, you're welcome to use that money that I gave to the kids. And so she was kind of asking like the moral debate of like, what do you guys think? Asking the opinion in the group, which is one of the amazing features of the group. You can get an opinion from someone other than just me. So she was asking, you know, they're paying off debt and they could really use that money, but like morally, where do you stand with that? And then she was also saying, you know, they've also sold a bunch of the baby stuff, like as their kids are getting older. I feel like every age, your kids grow out of things, you purge toys, you purge, you know, things around the house. And a lot of that stuff is usually gifted to your kids. And there's kind of this moral debate of like, okay, well, it was their stuff. So if I sell it, is it their money? And I feel like you know, that's a pretty legitimate question, right? And I've wondered about that too. And she was saying, you know, the kids have shelter, they have clothes, they have food, and they have way too many toys. So it's not like they're needing anything, which is the same exact position I'm in. My kids get gifted an insane amount of stuff. And I try to remind grandparents and family members, you know, we have a 750 square foot house. All three of our girls are in a 10 by 10 bedroom. They don't have room for a lot of stuff in the first place. So I thought this was a great topic for discussion. So I will share with you personally what I feel. And again, I feel like this is kind of a moral issue. This is kind of a, I guess moral is not really the best way to describe it, but it is a very personal, like, there's really not a right or wrong answer to this. So give it some thought. And maybe if you haven't thought about it or discuss it with your partner, like, what do we do with this? So for us, like I just mentioned, we have saved all of the money, the physical cash and coins that the girls have gotten for holidays. And we have eventually put it all in their savings accounts. I feel like gift cards are kind of that middle ground. It's not exactly cash, but it's not exactly a toy. So what do we do with gift cards? So gift cards, it really just depends on the season we're in, especially if it's right after Christmas. If it's right after Christmas, I kind of tend to hoard their gift cards, like, because they have so much new stuff anyway. And if it's like a birthday, you know, and my kids' birthdays aren't super close to Christmas. I mean, Izzy's is like 3 or 4 weeks, but, you know, they've gotten tired of their Christmas toys by then. But I will kind of try to hoard their gift cards and wait until they actually need something. Like if they get a Walmart or a Target gift card, I'll wait until they need a new pair of shoes or an outfit for a specific occasion. For example, Melanie got a gift card for her birthday. She really didn't need anything at the moment. So I kind of just set it back. And then it was right when she started potty training. She said she's ready. You know, she wants to go get panties. And so we went to Walmart and I bought her big girl panties with her gift card that she had gotten for her birthday. So technically, it was something that she could use. But it still kind of saved me money, like low-key. So it's kind of a win-win. Right now, I am actually hoarding gift cards that the girls got as gifts from my aunt and uncle from Target because I'm planning on buying them sandals for summer. So I'm kind of just hanging on to those. The girls are going to benefit from them. But also, we're human. Our kids are human. And we have been known to just let them go to Walmart and grab whatever they want until their gift card runs out. So, you know, we're not perfect either. But I feel like a gift card is definitely that middle ground. And so I wouldn't necessarily use their gift card for groceries, but I have used it for like clothing items or school supplies, art supplies, things I was going to buy them anyway, but are technically for them. So that's my take on gift cards. As far as selling their old things, we have always kept that money and we have put it towards debt or saved it or even kind of used that money. Say we sell clothes and we've used it to kind of reinvest in new clothes. So we've done that a lot. But our kind of thought is once it's a physical item in our house, we've spent time cleaning it up. It belongs to the family now. And it's not like Daniel and I are taking, you know, not just like we're having a garage sale with only their toys and taking all the money and just going on a super luxurious date night or something crazy like that. We are using that money for the good of the family, paying off debt or saving or something, you know, to help us grow in the future. So even if those items were gifted to them, it's really, really hard to keep track of what was gifted to them, what we bought them, what they bought with a gift card that was gifted to them. I personally can't remember, so I don't try to. And that's just kind of how we handle that. So I would love to know from you guys if you want to start a comment thread in the Facebook group, or even post in the thumbnail post, like the original post from this episode, and let me know what's your opinion on that. Obviously, don't get snarky with each other, which we never have a problem with, but just saying. But I think that's a really interesting topic for discussion, and I'm really, really glad that that question came up, because I really wanted to share my take on it with you guys. So this next question, we have two more questions, and then I will let you guys go. But this question, I'm going to kind of just paraphrase it, because it was sent to me in an email from one of my sweet ladies, and she's basically talking about, she has her emergency fund, she has her 3 months worth of expenses set aside, and you know, she's just kind of feeling like she's saving for a down payment on a house, and she's asking, you know, she would ideally love to pay cash for a home, but she just doesn't see how that is possible. And so she was just kind of asking my thoughts and comments on it, and I had to screenshot this email and share it with you guys, because I was like, so many of us feel that way. Like, we just feel like it's never possible. So you guys know that I am a big fan of being transparent with you guys. And I will tell you that maybe 2 weeks ago at the time of recording this, Daniel was home. We were sitting out on the porch just kind of having some evening coffee. I'm in this terrible habit of evening coffee before I cook dinner. So we're sitting on the porch and we're just kind of talking, and the topic comes up of the future. Dun, dun, dun. The future. And he's like, so what are you thinking? You know, and I am just the type, like, I get in my little nest. I am a homebody. I don't want to move, but once I move, I never want to move again. You know, that kind of thing. So now that we're in this house, I'm comfy and I'm just kind of good. And I don't really care that it's small. I just don't want anything to change, right? And he is a very, he's got to have something to look forward to, which I do too, but kind of in a different way. So he's like, I need to start planning this house. He's like, I need to start looking at houses, looking for land. When are we going to do this? Okay. And I told him, I said, our goal is, we don't plan to pay 100% outright for our house. If you do plan to do that, I think that's amazing. But I also feel like for us, we're renting, and I feel like there is a tipping point in that scale of when it starts to become a bad financial decision to rent. Right now, I feel like it's not, because we're renting such a cheap house, which I will link to the episode of why we are renting. It's one of my very first episodes, because it was something that I was getting asked a lot, if you want to kind of hear more about that decision and that journey. But there is a tipping point, I feel like, where it becomes an unresponsible financial decision to continue paying rent for someone else's house. That time is not now for us. And I feel like we've been in this house for 2 years. I honestly don't feel like it was a bad financial decision. Obviously, you have to weigh the pros and cons for everyone's specific situation. But I don't plan on paying 100% outright cash for our future, air quotes, forever home. It would take us forever, just like she was saying in this email. It just doesn't seem possible. And so we were talking about our other goals, and our goal is, we do want to save 20%, which is what we're currently working towards. And we want to keep the total cost of the home, the land, whatever, if we decide to build or buy, if we decide to remodel, whatever, our total cost to be around where we could pay it off in 5 to 10 years. That seems crazy, but that's our goal. If it's more than 10 years to pay it off, we don't want it. We don't need it. Okay. That's just us. You do you, but that's us. And so we're talking about that. And then, you know, the topic comes up, well, I'm probably going to need another SUV, because my SUV is very, very close to hitting 200,000 miles. And then we're like, well, you know, We really want to get serious about saving for retirement, saving for the girls' college. You know where this conversation is going. My head starts spiraling. I get very overwhelmed. My anxiety is triggered. And I just put my hands in my face, in my, my hands in my face, my face in my hands. And I just go, I just don't know. It all just seems so overwhelming. And you guys, I am not exempt from feeling that. Debt-free, 5 years into this journey nearly, I am not exempt from feeling overwhelmed and feeling like it's just never going to be possible. It's never going to be possible for you to retire. It's never going to be possible for us to have our dream home that's paid off. It's never going to be possible for us to pay for our kids to go to college. It just seems like so much. So I say all of that to tell you, this is what helped me get out of that spiraling panic attack that I was in. I took a deep breath. Daniel says, well, I don't mean to overwhelm you. I just think that we need to talk about it. We need to think about it. And I'm like, now I'm getting budgeting advice. I'm the one getting budgeting advice. I'm the one getting intentional living advice. All right. So we sat there. We fought through the little bit of anxiety. We didn't fight, but we battled through the anxiety and we kept going and we kept talking about it. Even though I was feeling overwhelmed, I was uncomfortable. I was wanting to just sit there and drink my coffee in peace. We kept talking. We did a little, just talk of like, well, we could be here, just a little rough estimating, a little update on where we stand with our goals. Even helps me just pulling up my budgeting worksheets, seeing where we stand, checking in on our net worth, checking in on our 10-year plan or, you know, whatever we need to do at the time, writing out those goals and seeing, hey, we have a plan. It might seem impossible now, but you know what? 5 years ago, being debt-free seemed impossible. And look at where we are now. So imagine what we can accomplish in the next 5 years or 10 or 20. Even though it seems impossible, it's not. So we write out a plan, you guys. Number one answer, write out your plan. Write out your goals. Number two, talk them out with your partner. If you are a single person on this journey, talk them out with a trusted person who understands, your best friend, your mom, your sister, whoever. Okay? Have that conversation. Talk it through. And I think that once you realize, like, there is a light at the end of your tunnel, that light might just be 10 years away. Well, at least it's there. It's not impossible. It might just take a long time, you know? All right. So that question, that's my answer for that. So the next question, last question is was also emailed into me. So sometimes when I send out my Rise and Shine Tuesday newsletters, I'll ask you guys, like, how's it going? And I'm going to reply to these emails, but I haven't because I really wanted to give you guys my kind of first draft, like raw answer right here on the podcast. So I've kind of been saving them. So if you ever see me ask, you know, how are you doing? How's your journey going? Et cetera, like hit reply and let me know. Even if I don't email you back right away, I still read it. Okay. So our last question, I'll paraphrase this for you guys, but basically, she's just feeling like other than a few medical bills that don't total up to very much, they really feel like they should be taking some time to set up a really decent emergency fund, kind of get their sinking funds together. Like we talked about earlier, those sinking funds and that emergency fund are so important because life is going to happen. Okay. So they're just kind of feeling like maybe they should just kind of hold off on paying off debt and really kind of beef those up to be prepared for whatever life throws at them. And, you know, I just feel like I always say that whatever helps you sleep at night is that's basically like your radar of is it a right or a wrong decision. If you feel like I'll sleep better if I have a $2,000 emergency fund versus a $1,000 emergency fund, I feel like do that, right? And V from V Fugle Fox was just on the podcast and episode 42, if you want to go back and listen to that one. And she is very unapologetic about the fact that she is going to continue to save even if she's in debt. Because she's been through things. Like she's been through a really hard divorce. She's moved. She's, you know, been through life. And she feels like, you know, life burnt me once and I'm going to keep saving no matter what. And there are a lot of people who feel like that. And so I feel like, you know, if that is what is going to help you sleep at night, do it. You know, like if you need to be contributing, a lot of people contribute to their sinking funds while they pay off debt. They'll just kind of not pay off as much debt so they can do their sinking fund. Some people will just continue to pay the minimums. I feel like do the math, like write it out. How would it look if we did it this way? How would it look if we did it the other way? How would it look if we did a combination of both? What do we feel comfortable with? You know, if you're doing this with your partner, talk it out. Like what makes sense? And the other thing she was saying in the email that really makes me feel like, yeah, like maybe you should save more is she's talking about, you know, there's a lot of change possibly coming. They might possibly move out of state and the company that she works for has been making some cuts. And so she's not sure about her job security and, you know, her student loans are about to come into effect where she's going to have to start paying on those. And it's just kind of that pressure of feeling like we don't have enough in savings. I feel like she's asking, you know, I feel like, you know, like 5,000 would make me feel better. You guys, especially if you feel like there's a storm brewing, like a possible move, a possible cutback, and having a couple extra thousand in your savings account is going to help you sleep better, is going to help you take a deep breath, you know, is going to help you think with some clarity, then do that. The whole point of this debt-free journey is freedom, okay? And freedom looks different for every person. So yeah, you don't, and she was saying this in the email as well, that a lot of people will mention like the false sense of security. Okay, like there's no reason to have $50,000 in savings when you have $50,000 worth of debt. Like that's kind of a false sense of security. Why have that debt looming over you when you have plenty of money to pay it off? And I have heard this, like people really do that. That's a false sense of security to just have a crazy amount of money in savings when you still have debt. But I feel like a reasonable amount, 5,000, that doesn't seem, you know, that doesn't seem outlandish. 3,000, something like that. If the regular 1,000 doesn't seem like enough. And also, especially if you feel like big changes are coming. It's just the same kind of thing is if you do actually lose your job or you do get pregnant or you do have to move. You know, when those things happen, you do go into emergency attack mode, storm mode, whatever you want to call it, and you approach it differently. And if you're anticipating those big changes coming, go ahead and get a little bit of a buffer. And then if it turns out you don't need it, at least you have it. Then like you can go back and pay off debt later if you need to, if that makes sense. The moral of this story, especially with this question, is it is personal finance for a reason. Personal. Okay. I can give you all the advice in the world and it's still just my opinion. It's still just advice. So I always hope that my advice inspires you, encourages you, at least helps you kind of weed out some options that you don't feel like work for you. Or maybe it just makes you so mad that you're like, nope, I'm going to do the complete opposite of what she said. Either way, at least you've made a decision, right? Okay, you guys. So that is my frequently asked questions episode. I would love to do more of these. I feel like it's kind of more fun to break topics down, not to talk about one topic for 45 minutes, but to talk about a couple of different topics. So if you guys are interested in me continuing to do these type of episodes, let me know, send me some feedback, DM me, email me, post in the Facebook group, mention it in the review, whatever you want to do. And let me know if you want to do more of these and send me your questions. And I would be glad to do more of these. It was really fun. Again, don't forget to share this episode. You never know who needs to hear this message. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already and leave me a review. And I will hopefully get to read your review very soon on a future episode. All right, you guys, don't forget to check out the show notes for everything that I mentioned in this episode, and I will talk to you guys next week. Bye, guys.